You are listening to Prometheus by a Minute. I am your host, Connor Coulson. This is Minute 83. This minute begins with Shaw about to enter the med pod and ends with her begging the med pod to hurry up. And once again, I'm joined by Luke Milton of the Dungeons & Drongos podcast, a roleplay podcast set in Fantasy Australia. Hello, Luke.
What up, what up?
So, Shaw anesthetizes herself. That's the big word to start a podcast with.
Yeah, golly. Like, you don't want to warm up to that?
Yeah, and isn't she already... So, I think David drugged her twice. So this is the third hit she's going for now.
You don't trust an android.
Mm. And we also... this scene, you know, I don't want to objectify people here, but Numia Rapace is bloody ripped. She looks great. She's a badass. She's ready for this.
I don't want to objectify people here, but that David, he's pretty hot and he's full of sweet milk, right? So, do you reckon I could milk him? And where from?
Yes, like Luke in The Last Jedi.
Yeah. Yeah, that thing had tits between its legs. It was incredible.
Wow, you know, David isn't often in these very tight-fitting body suits, but I don't know, it could be like Spanx. It's just hiding all sorts of things under there.
Well, look, speaking of underwear and underneath things...
Yes, and speaking of weird shit that David does, like, why?
Yeah, we don't ever really see space underwear that often in things.
Oh.
And here we go. She's all bandaged up. She's got a bandaged boobies and a bandaged bum-bum, to use the correct biological terms.
Yes, medical terms.
Yeah, this is like something that I think Dengar would wear.
Yes.
Dengar, of course, being the bandaged... Bounty Hunter, Bounty Hunter. Empire Strikes Back.
Now I'm thinking of sexy Dengar. Yeah. I didn't ask for this.
Yeah, I think this is what Dengar's wife looks like.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
I think Jeremy Renner would make a great Dengar. If you have a look at old pictures of Dengar if you need a refreshment, and think about Jeremy Renner, and he's your man.
Hmm. Yeah, he's a bit of a spuddy head man. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I feel like Dengar is the George Costanza of the Star Wars universe. I always imagine that he got really drunk, smashed his head on the toilet, wrapped it up with toilet paper, and just kept on trucking.
Yeah. So the only thing I can think is maybe David put her in the bandages, and I have so many questions, David. Like, why did you even take the time to do that?
I've got a theory. Mm. It's not for the faint-hearted.
Oh,
but
okay.
We already established that this pod was only calibrated to deal with male anatomy.
Ah.
So I think David must have seen her naked and just been incredibly confused and thought, that's a wound. We need to bandage this up. And there's some serious swelling there. We're going to bandage that up as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's only ever really worked for Weyland, so... Yep, I am now going to add that to canon. That is acceptable fan theories.
He's got no idea.
But, yeah, so I was looking into it and Numi's workout routine, because I was thinking, was it for this role? I don't know, should Shaw be muscular? So... She initially got in shape for Girl with a Dragon Tattoo.
She was 200 kilos before that.
And, yeah, so for the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, she was very lithe, very muscular. She wanted to look very boyish, sort of this kind of cage fighter look. And then for Prometheus, she's curvier. She's a higher body fat percentage, but it's actually more muscle. So she's kind of just bigger all over. But, I mean, I think she looks amazing. And she's beefier. And I was just thinking, well, for this character? And then I gave it some more thought and realized, well, yeah, I mean, she travels around the world. She's going into all these dig sites, climbing through caves and up mountains. And so she's probably a very outdoorsy athletic person.
Oh, I got there quicker than you did. I'm just thinking, like, what I know about archaeologists. I've seen Indiana Jones with his shirt off in Temple of Doom. Those dudes are ripped.
I think...
I've seen Lara Croft.
That's true, yeah. Nathan Drake, it's just shoulders for days.
Yeah. Yeah. I reckon you could go to any university in the world and check out the archaeologists, and they're going to be some buff...
Yes, the archaeologists are the Chads of the academia world.
They absolutely are. They are fine specimens.
And, oh, also impressive to note that Noomi does have a son, although he was born a decade before this movie. I mean, you know, most women, you're going to have some scars, some stretch marks, loose skin, but damn, Noomi, looking great.
Well, look, you're not going to... They're probably not going to spend, you know... I'd say there's probably a lot of actors and actresses... alike that have stretch marks and loose skin and all sorts of things, but we don't tend to see them on the big screen. So you don't know. She could unwrap that bandage and it could all just... it could all come out. She could be like fucking that guy with the alien embedded in him in Total Recall, for all we know.
Oh, right. Or I'm thinking of, it was in Futurama where they go to this gym and Amy walks past a guy in this sauna box thing. And he's like, hey. And she's like, oh, you. And kind of floating back and forth. And the guy gets out of it and it's just this huge guy. So I'm thinking, yeah, maybe those bandages just...
It could be. Could be. Either way, it's a look and it... is basically a proscenium to stage the action that's going to happen on her middle section.
True. And in Prometheus, actually, interesting enough, Prometheus shows women their bodies in a powerful way. You know, we see Vickers getting out of cryo. Everyone else is like doubled over, vomiting. She gets out. She's doing push-ups. Her body's exposed, but it's in this very strong, kind of scary way. And... right now, again, well, there's an element of fear, but it's not... Shaw isn't scaring us. We're scared for her. But, you know, she looks strong. She's a hero. It's not sexualization, which I... Alien's about sex, but it's never about sexualization, and I find that very interesting.
Dear listener, how are you feeling sitting on the bus listening to us talking about these tight bods? These sweaty, hot... sci-fi bots.
Prometheus just, by a minute after hours.
Just Connor and I in your ears talking about all these hard bodies.
No, Holloway does get shirtless. I was going to say, I don't think we see any... No, we do. One shirtless man. And in the script, I keep mentioning this, like, I don't even know why, but I keep mentioning that in the script, David just walks around the ship naked. He's standing in front of a dryer. Dong out. I don't know if he has a dong, but if he does, it was out.
But if he does, it's definitely dry.
Yes.
Well, look, she's been totally badass here. She's got the EpiPen-looking thing in her mouth. She's jabbing it into herself.
She is ready for this.
Ready for business. This is all about things going in and things going out.
Yeah, I mean, it's Alien. That's what it has to be about. I've been thinking about actors and how they deal with scenes like this. So from what I would imagine, when you're doing dialogue scenes or highly choreographed scenes, maybe it's a fight scene, that seems way harder than this, where you're just basically writhing around and screaming. But I hear from a lot of actors that it's actually really draining.
Oh, it would be. I mean, you've got to get your breathing and everything up to that level and maintain it.
Yeah, and I don't know how long she had to do this for. It was very technical, so I'm guessing probably days of just this.
Yeah. This machine, as she gets into it, is so obviously calibrated just for stomach stuff. I mean, I'm sure that white circle moves up and down, but this thing is built for what it needs to do in the scene.
Yeah, no, it doesn't seem to have any ability to... move the patient around. If it was a spinal thing, you can't just carry the patient and all of that. Like, you'd have to get yourself in here.
Yeah.
Huh. And you see that in a lot of... especially in science fiction, where you need a device to do a thing, And then it's literally just for that one thing. So you see that a lot in especially old school Fantastic Four. Everything Reed Richards builds, clearly made for one purpose.
Yeah.
And James Bond, you see that a lot. Very specific purposes. Now you got me thinking about that.
That's what I'm here to do. This machine's fucked!
Fucked. Yeah, Wayland, what were you thinking? Well, he builds a lot of shitty machines, let's be honest here.
She's really doubling down on the painkillers. Oh, well, we do see, once she turns it on, this thing slides back and forth just to sort of show that, oh, look, it does actually move, but then it goes straight back to the stomach where it originally was.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they used, or if they built this completely from scratch, or if they were using existing medical equipment or whatever, because that part that comes across the top looks like a bone density scanner, which I had one of those recently. So, yeah. It's really hard to get information on props. There's a lot on costumes, but props, not so much.
Well, this is a male-only medical pod, so it's probably a boner density scanner.
Mm. And Numi is sort of flexing her belly like she's making it stick out and writhe around.
Oh, God. Like, I used to... when I was like about 19, we'd go to All You Can Eat Pizza Hut, which was a thing, and then I would totally lay on my back and do that.
Yeah.
I find this very relatable.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how do we really know it's an alien fetus? Is it really just, you know, carbs? Too many of the pizzas, too many of the burritos?
I like that episode of The Young Ones where Vivian thinks he's pregnant and it turns out to just be a fart. which would also be pretty horrifying in this little pod.
Oh, God, yeah, she would Dutch oven herself to death.
Yeah, Melanie, yeah, so audience really doesn't know what's going to happen and is just panicking.
So apparently they built a fake torso for her. And in the trivia on IMDb, it says, oh, in one scene, you can see her legs not moving realistically. It's just, who cares? It doesn't stand out to me at all.
That spoils it. Stop the film.
Yep, do it again.
Ridley Scott, you lazy piece of shit. And bloody, why was she not prepared to be cut open for the film?
Hmm.
If Christian Bale can lose a lot of weight for a role, if Jared Leto can post people dead rats and use condoms.
Yeah.
Why is she not willing to be cut across the belly and have something poke around inside her?
I don't know. You think she's too good for this?
I have only seen this movie a long time ago. I did refresh on what happened. Mm. But we haven't seen this creature before, have we?
No, so this is, they call it the Deacon, and this is kind of the progenitor to the Xenomorph.
Yeah, so that's another great thing about this scene is, you know, watching it for the first time, you're not really sure what's in there.
Hmm. Although, oh yeah, so I should say, this is the confusing bit. So what she gives birth to is the facehugger. So you're seeing how the evolution of this creature, its life cycle right now, is all over the place. It's not the most efficient it could possibly be. Obviously, it becomes that later on. But, yeah, so what comes out is basically the facehugger. So it's this little squiddly diddly. And later on, it grows into this massive octopus thing, which impregnates through the mouth an engineer. Out of the engineer comes the Deacon. So, yeah, that's adding a few more layers to it.
I thought she'd just eaten a squid. I thought she'd gone to, like, a seafood restaurant and not chewed properly.
Right.
Give me the calamari. No time to cut it up. No, I'll just swallow it whole. Wouldn't this movie be better if at some point she went, I don't remember eating that?
Yes, I would have loved. So, I mean, I've gone through most of my notes, so I think now's the time to ask, what's your history with Alien and Prometheus, and what were your initial reactions to Prometheus specifically?
Oh, I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I think it's stylish as fuck. I love the designs. I love the costumes and things. I think...
Yeah, I think you and I really got into it when it first came out.
You know, people criticize the fact that it leaves a lot of unanswered questions, but that journey was enjoyable. And I think because it had been kept relatively secret, and because even from that opening scene, you're kind of not 100% sure what's going on. For me, that draws you through it and is quite an interesting ride. And then there are certain sequences like this where I think it's just a joy because it works so well and it gets you so tied in. And I think by the end of it, I don't know if you're like ultimately satisfied in the way that you're perhaps were expecting to be going in, but it's slickly done. I feel like he's in control of what he wants to do. I feel like he has a larger plan, even if we're not 100% aware of it by the end. And it's another interesting piece. I mean, that's still such a wonderful bit when they see the space jockey for the first time in the originals. And you have so many questions as, well, what is this thing? And what's the story? And where does it come from? And
yeah, that was very much my entry point to Alien was the space jockey. That always just mesmerized me. I thought that was so fascinating, got my imagination going. And I think Prometheus is perfect if you're a space jockey fan. Maybe if not if you're a fan of the Xenomorph. If you're coming here for that, you might be disappointed. But for the space jockey stuff, hell yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think any of them are perfect movies. I think they're all really entertaining movies.
Yeah, everyone seems to forget that stupid scene where Ash rolls the newspaper up and tries to shove it in Ripley's mouth. Like, it's a masterpiece except for that scene.
Oh, well, an alien's slow and it's a kind of, becomes that sort of haunted house, pick everyone off one by one movie. And then, you know, Aliens is very much a product of its time and is this sort of macho action movie. And they're all fun. They're all enjoyable. Three's the one I probably struggle with the most.
It's just so depressing. It's not like, oh, I've got an afternoon off. What am I going to do? Watch Alien 3? Probably not.
And I do actually like 4. I like Resurrection just because it's so wacky. Like it's
yes, I will defend it.
It's just such a fun ride. And, you know, and it's
and I think this franchise should be experimental.
And it's Alien filtered through the lens of something like City of Lost Children. So it's just insane. So
and that kind of grungy cinematography, yeah. I love it.
So I think they're all interesting as cultural artifacts. I think that, you know, we get very clouded with nostalgia and this idea of, oh, that was a perfect thing, and but then this one wasn't or whatever. And they're all hit and miss, and they all do different things and press different buttons.
Yeah, I wouldn't say Prometheus or Alien Covenant are significantly worse than any other entry into this franchise. In fact, I'd probably put it further up the top there. Primarily because it's just such a joy to see Ridley Scott return to this world and return to a familiar format. But what has he learned in those decades, and how has culture and filmmaking changed in that time? And that's been a real joy to analyze minute by minute.
And what people forget too, I think, is that everybody, and because we've even just talked about those past movies and identified the sort of similarities and major differences, everybody who goes through that journey as a viewer, you have that different thing about it that interests you. Like, I don't think we are all on the same page to be able to say, oh, well, this is the one exact thing that makes these movies enjoyable or makes this one great over this one. I think we all have different experiences. Plus, your actual physical, historical experience with it, I think, really colours the way you view a movie. I mean, I remember this being as close to a kind of bonding session I would have had with my stepdad, like watching Aliens on video, seeing it for the first time and being, you know, about 12 and feeling kind of grown up for sitting there with him and watching it. So, you know, you have all these different associations, whereas you might have been like a jaded asshole when this thing came out and it was easier to just mock things with your friends because that's, you know, so they're very different experiences.
I wonder, because I was 20 when this came out, and I was still very immature at the time, and so Prometheus blew my mind. Like, I had seen the other Alien movies, but I was just so invested, and in this scene especially, I was on the edge of my seat, just go, oh my god, oh my god. You know, I had a real great time. It was so exciting and mind-boggling to me, and such a beautiful-looking movie, and just, it was everything I wanted. And
I think people try to elevate themselves by finding problems with things. And I don't even think it's just movies. I think it's such a say, it's easier to say something dismissive and negative than to stand up for something that you think is interesting.
This show is a testament to that. I very much think that, yeah, just because you criticize something doesn't mean that you're smarter than that thing or that you're above it. And well, on this show, I do criticize the movie. But I'm also so in love with it and I will praise it. And yeah, you can have both. Why not get both?
Yeah, well, what I was going to say was, because I was meandering a lot to get there. But this idea of everybody has their own thing that interests them about that film.
Yeah.
Whether it's their experience or whatever. What I think is interesting about Prometheus, whether you gel with it or not, is this is our opportunity after all this time, like you said, of Ridley Scott coming back to it, for us to see what interests him about the mythology and realizing, which often happens when, directors and auteurs and things come back and readdress franchises, you realize that they actually have a very different experience with the material and a different interest level in the material than an audience does.
That's a really good point. And that's something I've definitely noticed that just, all this way through Prometheus, but watching Alien Covenant, I definitely see that as well. It's like, he really loves the androids. He always wanted to know more about the space jockey. And he says, I'm surprised they didn't actually investigate that further in the sequels. Well, good for him. He gets to cover that all by himself. And so he's really not interested in the xenomorph. I mean, that's sort of, he likes it, but he's just, in the headlines that went around about a year ago was, the beast is cooked. There's not much more to say about that. But he still thinks about this world and he still has these things that interest him and questions he wants to explore. And I love that.
Yeah, so his connection with it and his experience and his life experience with this thing is always going to be impossibly different to the audience who sat there eating popcorn with their friends one afternoon or one evening and watched it and then passed judgment on it.
Yeah.
And I think it's really rough when audiences dismiss the opinions and feelings of the people who were closest to it.
Sorry, George Lucas.
Yeah, and I know, and that is the same. I'm not saying you have to like them or agree with them, but I don't know why. I think bottom line is you don't have to be engaged by anything. If you see something and you think, oh, that did nothing for me, absolutely 100% valid. Move on.
Yes.
But don't get so upset about it that you become, your mission is then to convince everybody in the world that this person is a piece of shit and that they're an idiot and that this film was a piece of shit. Like, just let it go. But to dismiss the work of someone who has a history with it, is accomplished, and is giving us a unique viewpoint of someone who has been through it, I think that in itself is interesting, even if, you don't gel with the film.
Yeah, it absolutely has merit, and I don't think any director returning to their franchise decades later, that has so much merit just from a standpoint of, that sort of behind-the-scenes thing of what does the creator become over time, and it's wonderful to explore that.
And really, these kind of movies are going to be a relic because we're getting into a situation where it's going to be harder and harder for directors and writers and auteurs to make the movies that they want to, and particularly when it's attached to a big franchise, to take risks and to do something and to show their vision, because we're getting more and more into things that are written specifically to appease fans and things that change midway through or change between sequels in tone or whatever in order to appease fans. And ultimately end up pleasing no one because the people making it aren't 100% invested. There's, like I said, we're all connected to different things, so you're never going to please all the fans of anything because you're never going to appeal to the aspect that everybody liked about the thing.
Yeah, and I feel like Prometheus and Alien Covenant, for the most part, this is the pure vision of Ridley Scott. This is what he wanted to do. No one's making him do this. And it does. It's very niche. The fandom for Alien, for the Alien prequels, is so small. I basically know everyone. Like, I could just go on, you know, Reddit, and I just go, oh wait, hang on, I met that guy on Facebook, because there's not that many of us who are that passionate about it.
And look at our current climate as well, like just current events at the moment, where we have Coppola and Scorsese dismissing Marvel movies and saying, well, you know, they're making the same thing over again, they're just theme rides, and how completely out of joint and defensive that has made so many people. When,
oh my god, yes, I've been thinking about it lately.
It's 100% valid for those,
yes,
them to say that. I think there's a lot of truth in what they're saying. It doesn't lessen my enjoyment of the films at all.
Mm.
But they, I think in a lot of aspects, they are theme rides. I think they are formulaic and going through a... I think they it works, but they are, you know... How many times have we seen the hero go up against the evil version of themselves? Whether it's Iron Man, Ironmonger, or Killmonger, Black Panther, or Yellowjacket, Ant-Man, or Hulk, Abomination. Like, we keep seeing the same films and getting the same lessons out of them. And
yeah, I think people are forgetting that these are commercial products. It is made by a big soulless corporation. They are not your friend. But people kind of forget the reality of it. And they just go, but no, I love Spider-Man. Yes, you love Spider-Man.
And you should. It's entertaining. It's great. I love Spider-Man. Yeah, but that's not what they're saying.
No, absolutely
and
not.
And if James Gunn really believes that Guardians of the Galaxy is talking about real human experience in the same way that movies about humans made for adults are, then he's fooling himself. Just because you may get a couple of tears out of the raccoon doesn't mean that it's that type of movie. That said, it's a fucking entertaining movie. I love that movie. But we've got to look at things for what they are trying to do and what they achieve. And to start dismissing and then denigrating people who have made really impressive films in order to stick up for confectionery seems strange to me. I don't have a lot of time for people just blanket talking about artists and filmmakers and things and going, oh, well, they're shit, or they don't know, or whatever. I mean, unless they're a really problematic, horrible person, I think that, you know, we don't have to connect with everything we do or like everything that they do or anything like that, but you know, they're still accomplished people. That's what I don't get about George Lucas. You think, when in this world is creating Star Wars not enough?
Yeah.
Like, how the fuck are any of us supposed to be proud of anything if people think you're a piece of shit when you created Star Wars? I mean, that is not enough for people. Anyway, it's all bullshit anyway, because if anyone was in the same room with George Lucas, they would be like, oh my God, George, I love you. So it's all bluster.
I know, right? Yeah, I think what it is we're getting to this point where we're seeing franchises. We aren't seeing a lot of independent films. We aren't seeing movies that are standalone anymore. So these big franchises, it's basically, you've got these jobbing directors. You just, oh, we'll get any old person, some TV director to direct this major movie. It doesn't matter. It's not their vision. It's ours. They'll do what we tell them to do. And so it really is about, it's almost like fan fiction. You're just building this bigger and bigger fandom where people are more and more invested in the characters. I think that's what we're seeing right now. It's very much about the characters.
And it's fine. Like, it works. I love it. I look forward to it. It's a highlight of my film going year.
Yeah, I'd be lying if I didn't say it's not enjoyable.
But we can have all the things.
We can. And we don't have to... Well, I think what they're getting upset about is if you say something's not art, it must mean it's bad. But it doesn't have to be. Like, well, I like commercial stuff too.
Oh, I think people are terrified of saying that they like something that people are going to go, you know, if a movie's had any sort of negative thing about it, whether it's some, you know, people will not talk about it without couching it first in saying something. Oh, I know that this, or I know that people didn't like this, or you know, like, and I just think, fuck that. Like, if you like what you like.
Yeah, like, pop music's a great example. I think you're a defender of Miley Cyrus. I like Miley Cyrus. I like Lady Gaga as well.
I don't listen to Miley Cyrus music. I was certainly a defender of
the shaped head face.
Yeah, her image. Just because people so damn was, cool. Were so sort of personally affronted by it, and you were like, the music industry now, and to survive, it's WWE. It's like wrestling. It's personas and stage stuff, and I was just like, what she's doing is so shrewd.
Mm.
And so fun, like, to go and, like, we did end up seeing her. And, you know, there was, like, animation in the background from John Crisfalusi, who did Ren and Stimpy. And just the aesthetic and the sort of package was so appealing to me that it doesn't matter if I don't connect with all the songs. There was still something that there was to celebrate. But I have actually been listening to recent Taylor Swift.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. What's that like?
And I'll defend that. Again, I just think she's such an interesting persona. And
yeah.
People start talking about the feuds and things. And I'm like, it is wrestling. It's
just, it really is.
It's yes. Marketing. It's just fun. It's just silly. Like, to get caught up on that. I just like it when she's just like a total passive-aggressive shit.
Yes. And that, I think we're seeing this across the board. Music, TV, film. It's just, it's becoming bigger and bigger and bigger. There's more and more money in it. There's more competition. And yeah, all the stuff that rises to the top, you can argue it's not art, it's commercial, but it still has value. It still has impact.
Oh yeah, look, it lacks substance. It is what it is. But the same token, I think you've got to address everything for what it is. I mean, a hot dog is a hot dog. It's still enjoyable. You still want to have one, but to try and pretend it serves any function other than being a tube of pig anuses that you are going to guiltily enjoy, you know, that's disingenuous as well. Take things for what they are. And in Prometheus's case, it is Ridley Scott returning to something and us getting an insight into all the questions and things that he's been thinking about all this time. We've seen other people's versions. We've seen all the other stuff. Why not give it a chance and have a look at it? And, you know, fuck, if you don't like something, there's a new one around the corner. You know, you never have to wait long.
Yeah, like right now, I think, so Disney's acquired Fox, and it's been a bit quiet on that front for a little while now, but there's all these rumors like, oh, there might be a third Alien prequel, but also Disney's thinking about rebooting or spinning it off into some other direction. And it's just like, yeah, we're probably going to get both. It's calm down, everybody.
Yeah, these things will happen and they'll just constantly be around and they'll be all sorts of incarnations. And
yeah, God, how many Terminator sequels have we had? Like, we're no shortage of these things.
Yeah, and I like the thing that's happening now with, like, look at Halloween last year. I mean, the Halloween franchise is one of the most convoluted continuities, which
yes.
Skips all over the place. And then to be able to go, ah, oh, fuck it. We're going to do a sequel to the original, or this Terminator, to just go, well, let's do a sequel to Terminator 2 and not worry about the other ones. I mean, there's room to just... And of course, like...
I love that.
If that makes someone's head explode or gets them worried, then why are you even watching movies? Because it's not real. It's all a bit of a joke. Like, to worry about what's canon, what's not canon, where things... You know, I think that's great to go... Hey, let's get this person to give it a shot.
Yeah, I you know, say what you will about the fact that we've got franchises and it's all very commercial and stuff, but it's really cool that you will get these unexpected sequels to decades-old franchises. Like, anything can happen, and that's great.
Yeah, and it's modern mythology, and lots of people... We're in this position now where a lot of people grew up on this stuff and are now in a position where they're actually taking the reins. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, well, I guess we've ranted enough yeah. About popular culture. So once again, where can look, everyone
easiest
find
is to go
you?
To fruitlesspursuits.com. That'll be linked to Dungeons and Drongos podcast, FPcast, which is a movie review podcast that I do. And also, you should be able to find ScarJo A Go-Go, which is the podcast where I look at every Scarlett Johansson film in chronological order and just focus on her performance, whether she's in a scene or whether she's in the whole thing.
And I really need you to do one on Endgame. How am I supposed to feel about Black Widow until you tell me what to think?
I haven't. What am I up to? I think the last... I'm up to Hail Caesar. So there's been a big gap. And I think the last one I did would have been Age of Ultron.
Which I watched recently. It is my favourite Avengers movie.
I'll get there.
That about covers it. This is Coulson signing off. You can find me on traviandesigns.com, TRAVAAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook.